America's obsession with good health and exercise is leading to a boom in yoga. And one person at the forefront of the movement is turning up the heat with his torture chamber approach to the practice. Bikram Chowdhury's his name, and though his postures are from India, the Bikram approach is all American. He's built a multi-million dollar yoga empire on the sweat of his legions of followers. And by sweat, we mean sweat.
Welcome to Bikram's torture chamber to kill yourself for next 90 minutes.
This is Bikram Chowdhury. He whips his class, or as he calls it, torture chamber, into shape, dressed in nothing but a Rolex and a Speedo.
Sit down more.
This 59-year-old yoga guru pushes his students to contort till it hurts in a room heated to well over 100 degrees.
I don't sell cheesecake. You know that. So, you come there to suffer. If you don't suffer, you don't get anything. Nothing easy in life.
You're calling it a torture chamber. I've never heard of anything like this pertaining to yoga.
That's my yoga is. That's the yoga I bring it from India.
It's supposed to be relaxing, meditative.
No, that's the biggest problem in America. That's the way yoga introduced to America. Yoga means sit and close your eyes and you look at the lamp or look at the crystal and
relax.
Meditate.
No?
Absolutely not. Absolutely, you are not ready for that kind of yoga. Charge your body forward.
For Bikram, meditation starts on the outside, pushing the body to its extreme.
You use the body as a medium to bring the mind back to the brain. Perfect marriage between body and mind. Then you can reach the knock the door to the spirit.
Today, his hot yoga looks to be a great path to preserving and improving health. Bikram believes medical science will prove his yoga is good for you. He's collaborating with two separate clinical trials with doctors from the University of Southern California and Wyckoff Heights Medical Center in New York to study Bikram yoga's effect on bone density and the overall benefits of yoga. But Hollywood has been swearing by Bikram for decades. Name for me some of your high-profile clients.
Quincy Jones, Michael Jackson, Madonna, Candice Bergen, Brooke Shield. I mean, it's endless.
They all do Bikram.
All do Bikram. Years and years and years and years and years.
Speedos, science, celebrities, and swanky spas. It sounds like an episode of the lifestyles of the rich and famous, and in a way it is. But it is also part of the cult of Bikram Chowdhury, a migrant from Calcutta, India, who amassed a fortune in the U.S. with his specialized version of torturous hot yoga. The clips you heard were from a 2003 interview on 60 Minutes. Bikram started his yoga empire in Beverly Hills, California in the 1970s. And by the early 2000s, there were hundreds of Bikram yoga studios throughout the United States. But at the height of his popularity and success, Bikram's empire began unraveling. Accusations and allegations of sexual impropriety, verbal and physical abuse began to surface. In all, six lawsuits were filed against him, including one which required Bikram to pay some $7 million in reparations to his accuser. In 2016, Bikram divorced his wife of 32 years and fled the country. As of 2017, he remains a fugitive. On On this two-part episode of Apologetics Profile, senior apologist Brady Blevins shares with us details of his own research and investigation into the background of Bikram yoga. We'll also delve into the inherent spiritual dangers of Bikram yoga's doctrines and practices. Well, hello, Dr. Brady Blevins. It is another episode of Apologetics Profile. Good to be chatting with you today.
Dan, always good to be talking with you, man.
We are going to be talking about a phenomenon that began in the 1970s and has been steadfastly popular for decades among Americans and a lot of Christians. The practice and the tradition of Bikram yoga is going to be our topic of discussion today. Brady, why are we talking about Bikram yoga specifically? What is of interest to us?
Well, there's a couple of things that I think are vitally important for us. One is the whole concept of yoga is, I think, been really problematic as it has been brought over from the East and westernized. In fact, you could even say at this point that neither Christians who are in the know theologically or yogis from the East are real happy with what has happened with yoga here in the United States. So we have that aspect of it. But then we also have a secondary aspect, and that's this fellow, Bikram Chaudhary, commonly just referred to by his first name, Bikram, and that's how I'll refer to him the rest of the podcast. But what he has done has been more than just the spiritual issues surrounding yoga, but he's kind of taken it to a whole new level in what he has done in terms of building an empire, putting out an ideology that is certainly inconsistent with scripture, but even more alarming, what he has done spiritually and physically in terms of alleged sexual abuse and some of the issues regarding the finances concerning Bikram yoga as a whole.
We're going to look at two aspects of this, sort of the nature of what's happened to Bikram, and then we'll get into the discussion about what this yoga practice actually advocates. So let's get into the background of this. How did this become a phenomenon? Let's look into the history of how Bikram became so successful and the practice that he advocated became a standard and very popular form of yoga. How did this all unfold, Brady?
Yeah, so I think we start right back at Bikram, and he was born in 1946 in Calcutta, India, and this is where his story gets really interesting, because it's almost like you have a version of his life, and I don't know how much of that version is good or not. I mean, if you look at his website and you read about him, you think this is just this incredible person. I know that we just not too terribly long ago talked about Keith Raniere in Nexium and how, you know, if you hear about him, he's just almost this kind of like Jesus re-envisioned. He's the smartest and, you know, everything else. And it's kind of that way with Bikram, as they paint this portrait of him that he, at the age of four, starts practicing yoga under this Indian guru named Bishnu Ghosh. And according to their website, that he would practice yoga all throughout his childhood. I mean, 4 to 6 hours every day. And then he claimed that from the ages of 11 to 13... that he won the National India Yoga Championship and was undefeated until they forced him to retire because he was just so good. So after this, he allegedly gets into Olympic-style weightlifting. And it's reported that 7 days prior to the 1964 Tokyo Olympic Games that his spotter dropped the weight on his knee, and It was a horrific injury. It was, in fact, there was even talks that they were going to amputate his leg right above the knee because this injury was just so bad. And so as a result, Bikram begins to go through a time of depression. He's contemplating suicide. Well, his guru encouraged him to come back to yoga. And then Bikram stated that once he went back and started doing yoga again, that he made a 100% recovery in just 6 months.
Hmm.
And he claimed that he was able to accomplish this by doing yoga up to 12 hours every single day.
What it seems to be, and this is kind of along the lines of what we'll be getting into, but it seems like with every sort of guru founder story, there's a couple of things I've noticed. One is either if you do what I do, you'll be like me. And it's sort of an appeal to the individual and the well-being, and well, you can have all this and you can do all this, or there's some kind of pseudo miracles that take place. So either it's sort of like you can sort of achieve your own miraculous healing, if you will, or you can be like me and have these powers if you just do these things. But it seems to be at base a kind of works-oriented way to wellness that seems so attractive to people. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, we see this, like I just said, with Keith Raniere. You know?
Yeah, the similarities, and right.
Yeah, and it's remarkable. And we could go through the annals of history of all your different cults and occult-type charismatic figures, even within counterfeit Christianity. You know, we talked about the charisma of Kip McKean in our ICC podcast with Steve Matthews. Listen, Jim Jones, David Koresh, Marshall Applewhite. I mean, we could go down the list of these guys, but just like you go through all these different folks in the same way, many of these claims that I just listed off concerning Bikram have been investigated and found to be dubious.
Yeah.
That they're just simply not true. Just like with Raniere, where you know the FBI discovers that like he had a GPA of like 2.6 or something in college, and I thought, man, if he's the world's smartest man, I'm doing pretty good.
There's hope for us.
Absolutely.
So Bikram, we have this story that he had a tremendous injury, and then through the regimen and ritual of his yoga habits, to which he returned, he was able to heal himself in some sense. And then this really begins his the Great Commission of Bikram, if you will, where he, as the profile says, he goes throughout the world and he starts helping people, including a former president of the United States, Richard Nixon. Is that myth or did that really happen? Or are we getting ahead of the story here?
Well, maybe just a little bit. So what he does is he develops his own brand of yoga, and he wants to help people with hurt legs and hurt knees through his brand of yoga. And his brand is a condensed version of Ghosh's 28 postures. So Bikram takes his brand of yoga to the United States, and this is one of the things, which there's a Netflix documentary, Bikram, Yogi, Guru, Predator, that he really begins to, he actually talks about this, and he claims that he never had to apply for a green card in the United States, that one was just issued to him because it was a gift from Richard Nixon, President Richard Nixon. And Nixon was so grateful to Bikram because he helped Nixon, allegedly, with his phlebitis thrombosis. And so Bikram claimed that just after 4 days of hydropathic treatment, Nixon was unable to recall which leg had been the hurt leg. And so as a result of helping Nixon, and this allegedly, I think, happened in Hawaii. So as a result of this, he wants to reach out and give this favor of a green card to Bikram. And the neat thing is that in the Netflix profile, you hear the story from Bikram himself, which is just amazing. So from there, He moves to Los Angeles in the early 70s. He becomes extremely successful in large part because of the celebrity clientele that he gets in.
Mm.
And so this, I mean, like, I think Shirley MacLaine was one of the big names early on. And so, I mean, you know how it is. You get a couple of popular people, celebrities doing it, and it catches on. And so, I mean, if you ran down his celebrity list of clients, we're talking about, people like Madonna, Lady Gaga, David Beckham, Richard Nixon, Ronald Reagan, Bill Clinton. I mean, these are not only popular, but some of these are very powerful individuals. I mean, I just listed three former presidents of the United States. And so he was very smart to use these celebrities as a way to launch his brand of yoga, which really, in essence, is hot yoga. It's a form of hot yoga.
And we don't mean by hot, we don't mean popular, though it was. We're talking about literally like a temperature.
Yeah. It's a loaded term, right? Because yes, it is a very yes, it's very, very hot, and we'll talk a little bit more about that.
So we have a let's summarize here. We have a guru coming from India with these sort of pseudo miraculous kind of practices, or at least a technique that seems to have 100% efficacy. People are being healed and feeling better. And then you go to Beverly Hills, where there are celebrities galore. And if you want to launch something and make it popular, get some celebrities involved. And then you have celebrity endorsements, which seems to be a cultural authority for us in America. You know, if so-and-so likes it, then, hey, look, if Joe Montana liked it, or Brett Favre, or some sports celebrity, or some actress, or whatever, well, this must be good, right? Because so-and-so endorses it. And so here we have the quintessential formula for how to be successful in America. You can do anything if you have this formula down, right? The right technique, the right celebrity endorsement, the right home office. And then, and you're off and running. And so here we are with hot yoga becoming popular in the 1970s and 80s. And then he gets to, this becomes a book, obviously, because that's the next step, right? Popularity. You're going to write a book.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we're a smidge out of order. So in 1978, he writes the book.
Okay.
And I mean, you got to think it's the stepping stones of where he wants to be. And so the book further propels him where he wants to be. And then when you hit the 90s, now this idea of, okay, let's franchise it. Let's stretch this out. And that's where we start getting the McYoga coming in. And this is where you see it explode from just, his studio there, Los Angeles, Beverly Hills area, to 650 studios across America.
Okay. So here it is. It's landed. It's come over from India. It's sort of like, I remember, you weren't with us. James and I and another associate of ours went to the Krishna Temple here in Dallas, and that was kind of as James was filling us in, it was kind of an Americanized version of one slice of Hinduism.
Yes.
But mm-hmm. It seems to be that with the sort of capitalistic commercial society that we are, if it's popular, we don't think too much more deeply beyond the surface, Brady. That seems to be part of the problem with our culture, is that we are kind of surface level when it comes to things that are popular. And so this is really helpful in getting below the surface of where this came from and why it's become popular. What happened after the book? Where did we go? We're in the 90s. It's swept across America. We have McYoga. Nobody's really thinking beyond feeling good for themselves, right? This seems to be kind of like the Keith Raniere thing or the ICC thing, or we just feel good about ourselves, right? It seems to be that self is propelling this. I want to feel better. And so as long as I feel better, I don't really have to think much about why I want to feel better, or that we're not thinking too much about the techniques or the methods or the ideologies behind them, because I feel better, right?
Well, yeah, because listen, for a lot of people, they want the physical benefit, and or if it gives them whatever benefit they're looking for. So if it helps them with their depression, or if it helps them with mm-hmm. their flexibility, if it helps them mm-hmm. with their sex life, if it helps them in their marriage, if it helps them make more money, if it helps the pain go away, they really don't care what kind of – they don't care what it's really costing them. And I don't mean that from a financial standpoint. Mm. I've talked to many students, and I teach at a Christian college, a Christian university, and I've had students that I'll mention yoga or something, and they'll be like, "Oh, yoga? Oh, no, that's great, man! I tell you, I've gotten 3 more miles on my fastball since I started doing yoga." And I said, "Well, at what cost?" And they said, "Well, what do you mean? Isn't this just about stretching, or isn't this just about, good health?" And I said, "Well, I said you can certainly get a physical benefit from it, but there's a spiritual side of it, and so that's where it starts to play." I want to talk more about that later, though. I'll get back to your question. So this thing starts to explode as they franchise it out. Now, here's the deal: if you're going to franchise it, you want to make sure. I mean, the whole point of a franchise is that, you know, your Big Mac's going to taste the same in Idaho as it does in Texas or as it does in Maine. You know, it's the same thing. Well, to do this, you have to go through training. And so Bikram started focusing on these different training sessions or training programs so that you could become a certified teacher of Bikram yoga. Mm. Now, you couldn't establish your own studio with the Bikram name unless you had gone through Bikram's training. Mm. And so he holds these. Now, the one thing I will say, because if you compare Bikram yoga to other styles of yoga in the shops that are set up kind of around America, you have a governing board of the yoga world here in the United States, and their bar is very low to be an instructor. But I will say that out of all the different forms that are out there, Bikram definitely put them through the ringer the hardest in terms of mm-hmm. actually making it much harder to be certified through Bikram yoga. Not everybody was. But what he would do is he would hold these trainings. In fact, he's still holding these trainings all across the world. And he'll have them at really nice, plush spa resorts. And he charges an exceptional amount of money. These trainings last about 8 weeks or so. Eight to nine weeks, I guess, would be fair to say. Check this out. In 2019, the cost for tuition and single occupancy was $16,600. And that was for 9 weeks of your time.
Wow.
Now, what is the $16,600? What does that get you? Well, it was tuition, your hotel accommodations, your transportation, you know, to and from the airport, the lectures that Bikram gave, the yoga classes that you participated in, towels, water, and all materials necessary to complete the training.
Wow.
So, I mean, it doesn't take long to figure out that he was making tons of money just off the training alone.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Bikram was able to trademark his brand name in 1971, but in 2002, he was denied a copyright for his specific 26 poses in sequence. What happened is the United States Copyright Office ruled that the sequence of poses were not eligible to receive the copyright.
Oh.
And, of course, these poses were poses that have been around, you know, for many, many years. We'll just say that. And so what this effectively did is it kept Bikram from being able to take people to court, and really made what he did free for public consumption.
I
think this is where we start thinking about his whole ideology and his whole thought process and how that comes into play and why it became so important that, you know, hey, you want to be Bikram certified and you want to, you know, you want to go through his way of doing things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what starts to, this seems all fine and dandy. I mean, nothing, okay, it's expensive, it's rigorous. What were the fundamental, where did the fundamental problems with Bikram start, or how did they begin? What started to unravel?
Well, for in my opinion, based on all the research I've done and looking at all the evidence that's out there, it seems that just Bikram is swept up in pride. Like, you know, he's read his own press clippings, if you will, and he begins to really operate. And really this ties into those training sessions. You say, well, what's this like? Well, and tell me if this doesn't ring familiar with other groups. So he has them doing yoga in an extremely hot room with a certain level of humidity in the room. He's really trying to mimic the what it's like to be in India, okay, which is just really, really hot. And so you have people doing yoga like all day long. And I mean, their bodies are being pushed to the edge, and maybe even then some. They're not eating; they're not taking in a whole lot of calories. And then he, especially with certain members, he would invite them up to his room, at his hotel suite, and he would watch Bollywood movies and try to keep them up as late as he could, knowing that they had to get up early the next morning to go into their classes and to start doing all their stuff for training. And so you have sleep deprivation, you have questionable calorie intake coming in. He is in essence demanding attention. These are all signs of classical cults, of the classical definition of a cult. Now, a lot of times, you know, and a lot of what we deal with here at Watchmen is the theological cult. But just like Nexium was more of a classical cult, we see these same kind of ideas coming up. Now, what happens? Well, these people begin to look at Bikram as their guru, as their spiritual mentor. And this just opened them up really to be able to have a situation in which they were ripe for what we would call spiritual abuse. And Bikram takes it a step further. And what happens is that when he's really at the height of his popularity, now all of a sudden allegations of abuse start to come out. And it's that stuff that, like, he was racist, homophobic, all the way to the place where they were accusing him of physically assaulting some of the patrons of his training classes. Then maybe what makes it even worse is the sexual assaults allegations that he had from some of the women in this group. Now, this is not even talking about, you know, all the verbal abuse that they would put up with in class. In fact, I think the Netflix video does a really good job of capturing some of these moments where he is just brutal to these people. I mean, oh, you're fat, and, you know, that's probably one of the nicer things that he said. I'm not going to get into all of it. But so what you have happen is in 2013, you have the very first lawsuit filed by a lady by the name of Sarah Bond. And what she alleged in the lawsuit was that in 2005, she was at Bikram's home for Thanksgiving, and he was he embraced her from behind, and he pressed his genitalia up against her leg. And then she goes on to say that 3 years later, 2008, that she's assisting him in a teacher training in Acapulco. And in this case, he traps her in his hotel room, and he begins to again grind his genitalia against her leg. And then in 2013, the case is submitted to the district attorney's office in Los Angeles County. But they didn't pursue the case because they determined that there was insufficient evidence to file criminal charges. So obviously they're not going to go after a case they don't think that they can win or they don't have sufficient evidence. But it's really sad because it's almost like, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire. And the smoke began to really begin to come up because from 2013 to 2015, you had six more sexual harassment lawsuits filed against Bikram. And in each of these cases, the women claim that he began by approaching them with an offer of a relationship. All of which, by the way, were rejected. None of the women, willfully entered into any kind of sexual relationship or boyfriend-girlfriend type relationship, anything of that matter. So once they rejected him, well, he would begin to escalate the amount of time they spent together. So he would find ways for them to spend more and more times together. And listen, when he would call these women up to their room to watch these movies at night, he would have them, you know, giving him massages, feeding him. It's really just kind of sickening. And, you know, these women adore him. They look at him as a spiritual leader. Man, he's flat out taking advantage of them. And so
it's interesting, Brady. What is it? Is it that they've invested so much time and money into this, or what actually? It seems very similar. It just, whether it's yoga or whatever cult we're talking about, what is it that gives people, or you can't see it for the moment for what it is, that so many people are devoted to such something that is such obviously, it's not a good idea and it's taking advantage of people, it's abusive. Why do you think people endure these things?
Yeah, I don't think it's one of these things where that it's obvious to them what kind of dangerous thing that they're involved in. I think that happens much later in the course of events, if you will. So with Bikram, for example, he is viewed as a guru, and there are efficacious results that come from, physically speaking, from doing yoga. I mean, it's undeniable that there is a physical benefit to it, but what they don't realize is that there is a underlying spiritual danger that comes into play. And it's like we've said many times before here at Watchman Fellowship, is that, you know, deception has nothing to do with intelligence. And so now you're getting this strong affirmation that yoga must be good because, man, I haven't felt this good in 10 years. And, man, if he...
So it's like a frog in a pot syndrome.
Yeah.
In stages.
Yeah, exactly. The next thing you know, you're being boiled, you know? Yeah. So, now what happens is all these allegations pop up. I think some of the frogs realize they're in the pot, you know?
Hot water.
And so you have that people begin to break their affiliations with Bikram Yoga. Then probably the most, the one that stuck, you know,
mm-hmm.
out of all this, the one thing that stuck was when his former attorney, and I'm going to say her name wrong, and I apologize to her.
Yeah, it's a tough name.
Especially because she's attorney. I don't want her to sue me, right? Meenakshi Jaffa Bowden, she sued him, and in her lawsuit, she claimed, amongst many other things, discrimination, sexual harassment, and defamation of character were all part of the work environment with Bikram. It's like, wow. So in her complaint, she alleged that she was fired, that he had advised her to pressure a witness in a suit to stay silent, and discussed having the federal judge who ruled against him, quote unquote, taken out. Okay, so this is what he wanted her to do. And of course, you know, I mean, anybody with a conscience is not going to want to be involved in something like that.
Mm.
And so he also wanted her to falsely accuse a male studio owner of sexual misconduct, claiming that this particular male studio owner was a rapist. Now, she won her civil lawsuit. And in fact, in 2015, Bikram was ordered to pay just a little bit over $7 million in compensatory and punitive damages to Jaffa Bowden. And, you know, she, you know, her claims is that she was unfairly fired, which, you know, if what she's saying is true, and it seems like that within under the scrutiny of the court of law, that was true. Here it is. We're seeing him for who he truly is. Now, just as of as of just a little bit earlier this year, and I imagine it hasn't changed in a couple of months since I looked into this. She still has not been she has not received a penny from Bikram. But I think there's something else that's very telling, and that's that in 2016, his wife Rajashree divorced him after 32 years of marriage.
Yeah, that's phenomenal, because all of this is going on while this stuff that you're talking about, all this is going on while he's married, and it's you're like, whoa.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
You know, I mean, I don't think it's necessary to bring up all the lurid details, but I mean, we're talking about sexual confrontations happening in the kitchen, you know, while his wife is just down the hallway.
Yeah, that's,
I mean, this is
remarkable.
It really is. And so, I mean, it's amazing, but yet he has left our country. He left in 2016, and he didn't give up any of the proceeds of his business. In 2017, the Los Angeles County Superior Court issued a warrant for his arrest, and Bikram is still a fugitive. Sometimes we see reports pop up, you know, kind of like, where is he now?
Yeah,
he was supposed to have a 2020 Yoga India tour. Now, we never received any notification whether that tour happened or not. I'm imagining with COVID, it probably didn't happen. But this was again supposed to be not just a yoga tour of India, but it was going to be another teaching, training, certification, and recertification tour. And he was going to look at the most important places in India for yoga.
There was a report earlier this year, as I was looking into this, there was a report earlier this year that his assets had been seized in Mexico. I don't know if he was in Mexico for a time, but it's kind of one of those things where he's globetrotting, avoiding capture. So like you say, it's sort of where's Bikram, right? That's a never-ending saga. But he's not in the United States. He's not been here since 2016. And the saga continues. He's still trying to peddle his wares, so to say. So that's the individual. I was fascinated, Brady, by the idea that there's still a Bikram Yoga franchise right here in North Texas, in Grapevine. They have a little disclaimer on their website that says they're not in any way affiliated with the Bikram Yoga headquarters. But they retain the sort of practices and the poses, and they claim on the website that it's fun and energizing. And I don't know if you want to switch talking about the actual yoga practice, because that's half of the profile that we're talking about, are these yoga practices, these moves and things, because they may disassociate themselves with Bikram's behavior, but then what about the actual practices that he set up? It's just stretching and exercise, right? There's nothing wrong with that.
And, you know, it shocks me a little bit of the studio that you're talking about here in North Texas, because the Bikram name is... To say it's tarnished in the yoga community here in the United States is an understatement. But I do think we need to look at the teachings of Bikram and his views of yoga. And so I do want to speak to the doctrine and practice of yoga as seen by Bikram. So I do want to share some things that... that maybe other people who are practitioners or maybe knowledgeable of yoga would look up and go, no, that's not right. No, I want to give you I'm going to give you Bikram's version of it. So we could definitely talk more about that.
So that's a fascinating background about Bikram the man and where he came from and what he did. But let's just say all of that aside, let's talk about next week. Let's get into the practice and the meditation, the doctrines, the practices, the teachings of Bikram and what yoga is as he perceived it and why as Christians we should be very much aware of what's going on when we're practicing this kind of yoga, or if even we should be practicing this kind of yoga. What do you say we talk about that next week, Brady?
Dan, that sounds like a great idea.
All right. Brady, any final thoughts on this, on this particular part of this individual? What can we learn from this week biblically?
Well, I think biblically that we always need to look at what the person, look at the fruit of their behavior to see if this is something that we want to emulate in our lives. And even before we get into all the sexual allegations, the abuse, the physical, the verbal, the racism, homophobic thought, all that, I mean, just by seeing how he behaved in class, that's fruit of his behavior. And the Bible tells us that, you know, it's not what comes into it. Jesus says it's not what comes into a man that defiles him, but what comes out. And when we see what he's doing, his behavior, even in the 1970s, did not comport with what the Bible taught. And that alone should be a red flag to us, regardless of who we're talking to or regardless of who we're connected with.
Yeah, you will know them by their fruit. Good words, Brady. Good wisdom. Thank you very much. And we will see you next week for more insights into the doctrines and practices of Bikram Yoga. Thanks for joining us this week on Apologetics Profile.
In 2 Corinthians chapter 10, the Apostle Paul reminds us the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty in God to the pulling down of strongholds, casting down arguments, and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, bringing every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ. Apologetics Profile podcasts are designed to equip you with the resources and tools for engaging the ideas of other religions, worldviews, and cults that challenge your faith. Every Monday, a new conversation to help encourage and exhort you to engage with your non-Christian neighbors in conversation about the truth of the gospel. For Apologetics Profile, I'm Dave Mitchell. Thanks for listening.